Good morning. It's September 6th. The time is 8 o'clock, and this is regional news for the Western Slope here on KVNF. I'm Travis Bubenik. A state task force is considering whether to rate more than 556,000 Colorado homes located in burn zones as being at risk for wildfires. The Denver Post reports that information could then become available to insurers. Under the new ratings, so-called mitigation audits would be required for high-risk homes. Those audits would be performed by state foresters and would require homeowners to take steps to protect against wildfires. According to the Post, the task force is also proposing a state fee on homes built in wildfire-prone areas. The state would use that money to offset local fireproofing costs in communities. Those suggestions come as the amount of Colorado forest land containing development is expected to reach 2 million acres by 2030. Meanwhile, the cost of protecting homes from fire is growing, and Task Force Director Barbara Kelly says around 40% of residential building is projected to be in burn zones. The Post reports the task force was called together by Governor John Hickenlooper and is working to recommend environmentally sensitive ways to limit wildfire damage and improve forest health. Those ideas are due to the governor by September 30th, and it's expected that state lawmakers will have to act on the task force's findings. The U.S. Forest Service last week made around $7 million after auctioning nearly a block of its three-acre campus in Aspen. According to the Denver Post, most of the money from the sale will go towards finishing redevelopments at the headquarters of the White River National Forest Aspen Ranger District. The remainder will be used to restore administrative and employee housing in the forest. In May, as the drought lingered for yet another year, Governor John Hickenlooper issued an executive order to the Colorado Water Conservation Board, calling for a new Colorado water plan that he says should support agriculture in rural Colorado and align state policy to the state's water values. Hickenlooper also paid tribute to Colorado's historic water law, which claims first in time, first in right. But many in rural Colorado think that any new plans about how to allocate the state's water are suspect. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
Delta County Commissioner Mark Rober is a new member of the Gunnison Basin Roundtable, one of nine roundtables in the state. Reporting to the Colorado Water Conservation Board, the roundtables were created 8 years ago. Their purpose is to facilitate discussions on water management issues and encourage locally driven collaborative solutions. They are intentionally diverse and inclusive.
There's 31 people on the roundtable. Represent counties, agricultural interests, municipalities, represent municipality industrial water, recreation water, environmental water. You've got everybody that you could think of is represented there.
This group is scheduled to debate a document that sets forth principles for the Colorado Water Plan, starting with an affirmation of the power of local governments.
Well, number one is real important. The solutions in the Colorado Water Plan to supply water for growth and development in one part of the state should not override land use plans and regulations adopted by local governments in part of the state from which water will be taken.
The conflict over water between the eastern and western slopes of the state has persisted over the past 80 years, and Coloradans don't hold the only claims to the state's water. There are 9 interstate water pacts, and Colorado rivers feed 18 downstream states plus Mexico. As population increases and critical water shortages loom, Rober is adamant that ranching shouldn't be sacrificed in times of water scarcity.
There's always talk out there that this crop is more valuable than this crop, therefore this crop deserves the water. It comes up even locally, you know, and whenever you start prioritizing of who is more important than somebody else, regardless of water rights, because the state was founded on water right, it's a scary thought, because then everything becomes a public trust, and then you'd have no rights that maybe your families or whatever have had for over 100 years.
Rober's family has been ranching in the North Fork for generations, enduring the severe droughts of 1934, 1954, 1977, 2002, and 2012. He predicts that Western Slope water users will stand together and, if need be, defend their water rights.
I think we will have to assert ourselves in just saying no, and that I'm not going to give anything up without it going to court.
The Gunnison Basin Roundtable meets Monday, September 9th at the Holiday Inn in Montrose at 4 p.m. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
Marty Derlin finished her last week of morning news hosting last Friday. All of us here at KVNF would like to sincerely thank her for her hard work and diligence and her continued reporting efforts. According to iNews Network from Rocky Mountain PBS, a new study based in Colorado says more widely available marijuana in the state could lead to more children accidentally ingesting the drug. Medical toxicologist Dr. Sam Wang at the Rocky Mountain Poison and Drug Center co-authored the study, which focuses on marijuana-related hospitalization of children. Wang says in the wake of loosening marijuana laws, the study found what he calls a definite correlation between marijuana's wider availability and a rise in unintentional ingestions. The study specifically cites a jump in the number of children admitted to hospitals after accidentally swallowing THC products. Some marijuana entrepreneurs, however, say regulations will actually make it less likely for pot to fall into the wrong hands. Marijuana retailers say safeguards, like requiring childproof packaging, will keep the drug away from children. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that the city of Grand Junction on Wednesday voted to ban retail marijuana sales. City councilors voted unanimously to ban all aspects of retail marijuana activity, though some people did express their support for the new industry. According to the Sentinel, Grand Junction Police Chief John Camper gave a statement to the council with statistics showing potential links between marijuana use and an increase in nearby school expulsions and car crashes. Camper also said telling students not to use drugs while tolerating legal marijuana businesses would, quote, send mixed messages. The Sentinel reports that Mesa County has instituted a full ban. Resident Charles Elliott asked counselors at the meeting to allow the retail industry, saying some area residents aren't comfortable signing up for the state's medical marijuana registry. Elliott also said if recreational pot is made illegal in Grand Junction, users will simply buy elsewhere, which he says would encourage driving under the influence. Counselor Jim Duty said that although he's seen how the drug has helped a family member deal with the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder, he's still concerned with marijuana use being against federal law. Two Colorado state lawmakers are facing recall votes on Tuesday over their support for stricter gun laws. The recalls have cast a national spotlight on Colorado and are drawing big out-of-state donations. Benta Berkland sat down with reporters who are covering the recall campaigns to discuss what's at stake.
Joining me, we have Megan Schrader, a reporter for the Colorado Springs Gazette, and Peter Marcus with the Colorado Statesman. The recall campaigns target Senate President John Morris of Colorado Springs and Senator Angela Jaron of Pueblo. Megan, I'll start with you. You've been in Colorado Springs covering the recall and Senate President Morris's campaign. What's the scene like down there?
It's gotten kind of nasty. The campaign advertisements on both sides are targeting each other. They're pretty brutal and not very truthful. There's a lot of that flying around. There's a lot of advertising going on, people walking Senate District 11, knocking on doors, trying to get people out to the polls.
Do you get the sense that a lot of voters in that Senate district are paying attention to this?
I think so. I think it would be hard not to pay attention. There are people, obviously, who don't know. They don't know they live in Senate District 11. They don't know how to vote. But I think that the conversation is big.
And Peter, even if the recalls are successful, Democrats would still hold a majority in the state Senate. They've pledged not to roll back any of this gun legislation. They're very proud of what they did pass. What do you see is at stake here, and why has it gotten so big, like Megan said, and drawn so much not only statewide attention but national attention?
I think both statewide and nationally, it's probably the symbolism that's involved. I mean, as soon as these gun bills came up, they started targeting, no pun intended, these Democrats, and, you know, they picked a handful that they thought were vulnerable, and they said, we're gonna get you out of there, we're going to recall you. And then they actually got to this point where they are actually having recall elections. And I think it's the symbolism that, you know, we said we're going to get you for this. We are now getting you for this. So on both a state and national level, it's like if you don't listen to what we have to say about gun rights, there's a chance you might not stay in office. You know, that's really significant.
Gun rights advocates are really motivated. There's a lot of enthusiasm. I know earlier Democrats were worried about the fact that voters aren't going to be getting these mail-in ballots because of some court challenges. Most people do have to vote in person. How do you think that's going to play into things?
Turnout is going to be key in this race. Who can get their voters to the polls is going to decide the election, and it's made more difficult by the fact that voters don't know. It keeps changing on them how they're supposed to vote. First, it was everyone in the district, all 69,000 registered voters in Senate District 11 are going to get mail ballots. Then a court ruling made that impossible. So now no one, unless they specifically went down and requested a mail ballot, is going to get a mail ballot. They have to go to a select number of early voting centers. Their traditional neighborhood precincts aren't even going to be open. So it's going to be difficult for voters. They need to be paying attention.
Peter, do you think whatever happens, and I know it's a little speculative, but do you think it will bleed over into next year's legislative session?
I don't know if it'll bleed over into next year's session so much. We'll be going into, you know, the 2014 election and all that. So I think that some of the lawmakers are going to try to tone it down a little bit. I don't think that we're going to see, you know, retaliation for this by Democrats with more gun control. I don't think Republicans are going to get too involved. But going into the 2014 election, hypothetically, if we lost both John Morris and Angela Jaron in this building in the legislature, that makes Democrats more vulnerable going into 2014. They would hold a one-seat majority in the Senate.
El Paso County Sheriff Terry Makeda at a rally made the point of, for him, this doesn't stop at recalling John Morris. He wants it to bleed over into the 2014 elections, you know, a takeover of the majority in the House and Senate. So there's one person right there who is politically connected right now saying this is going to be a kickoff for 2014, a Republican tidal wave, if you will.
It'll definitely be interesting to follow. Thanks so much. That was Megan Schrader with the Colorado Springs Gazette and Peter Marcus with the Colorado Statesman. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
Capital coverage is funded by the Gill Foundation's Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud supporter of local organizations like the Colorado Department of Education and its programs to prepare and inspire the next generation of science, technology, engineering, and math teachers. By North Star Bank, Colorado. With their community relationships, local knowledge, and expanded financial resources, North Star Bank, Colorado is redefining community banking and helping build a brighter future for Colorado. And by KRCC in the Pikes Peak Center, presenting Ira Glass from This American Life, Saturday, October 12th at 7 p.m. Tickets at ticketswest.com and the Pikes Peak Center box office 520-SHOW.
Thanks for tuning in to the KBNF local newscast this morning. I'm Travis Bubinick.